All right. Well, good evening. And as Chris mentioned, we're finishing the series on our values. And tonight we're thinking about love. And when I, as we were kind of, it was almost like we picked some of these out of the last three, we kind of were randomly selected. And so when I got love, I was thinking, oh, well, that's going to be both easy but also intimidating, because I think love is a very familiar word, and at another level, it's also a hard word, a hard value to live into. And so I'd like to just start by working towards coming to a definition. If you were to look at love in the dictionary, I think that none of us would be surprised. You would find that love is a strong affection for another arising out of kinship or personal ties. Affection, tenderness, or attraction that's felt by lovers. Affection based on admiration or common interests, unselfish loyalty, benevolent concern for others, a warm attachment, enthusiasm, devotion. So all these words, I think, are familiar. But sometimes the context seems to change, or maybe it's our vocabulary seems limiting. And as I was thinking about what it means to begin to unpack love, our Jan, who works in the office on staff of this, sent me a forward of a forward of a forward, so I'm pretty sure it's true. But the premise was that a group of professional people, and I looked around a little bit to kind of try to identify who these professional people were, but it just said professional people, so who knows what that means. Professional hockey players got together and said that they wanted to ask a group of 4 to 8-year-olds the question, what does love mean? And so here are the actual definitions that these kids said. So Carl said, love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. That's love. This kind of reminds me of the old top nine. Love is when you go out to eat, this is what Christy says, love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Emily says that love is when you kiss all the time. Then when you get tired of kissing, you still want to be together and you talk more. My mommy and daddy are like that. They look gross when they kiss. Bobby said that love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen. Really, Bobby, you said that? Age 7. Nice. Noelle said that love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt and then he wears it every day. That's a solid one. Tommy, love is like an old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Chris said that love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says that he is handsomer than Robert Redford. You guys probably aren't old enough to know. Robert, yeah, who's Robert Redford? I've seen a few movies with him in it, incidentally. That's how old I am. Oh, and finally, Anne said that love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him alone all day. And I think that that often as we talk about love, in especially in kind of our culture, it seems to kind of get often reduced to a sentiment, to a feeling. And the way that that the committee that was working out these values worked at defining love as our value is this way. They said, we are committed to loving others, seeking their well-being with compassion and mercy. So that's how we would define the value of love. But as we read that definition, there's even that definition seems somewhat limiting when actually what it means to love. When we talk about our other values, we value scripture, prayer, community, outreach, diversity, creativity, justice, and generosity. It seemed like you could begin to describe them in a particular way. But I think that love is not singular, and that it actually can't be nailed down to one specific thing. And even if we were to think of love in a kind of a biblical context, we're told that God is love. But even in thinking about how one would define God, that becomes tricky. Even the Apostle Paul, who was hoping that people would understand how high and wide and deep is the love of Christ, put out the caveat that I want you to do that even though it's impossible because it's so limitless to understand who God is. So at some levels, love is a definition that needs many facets, and it becomes, I think, a more of a overarching theme than rather one singular value. I would say then, so for our purposes as we begin to think about love, that as we think about all of those values, that really to begin to define love is the essence of all those values at work. So when all those values begin to fire, when we live into those values, then love becomes present. As I mentioned, I think that our culture has often romanticized the meaning of love, reducing it to cute kind of little movies that make us feel good on a Friday night. And maybe also that our language is somewhat limiting in expressing love. I was thinking about, in the last few weeks, the way I've used the word love. And I discovered that I love shoes, that I love this recipe. I love the gas mileage that our car gets. I'd love a cup of coffee. I love my wife and my kids, and I love God. And I have to admit that if I were to kind of measure those, they're not all in equal terms. At least I hope I don't love my shoes more than I love my kids, for instance. That would seem out of balance. And so as we get into this idea of love, I'd like us to do a little bit of a kind of a social experiment. And I want to show you a clip out of a familiar movie and then kind of show it a few more times, changing it just a little bit to see how it affects us. So as you watch it, just kind of pay attention to the things you feel as we move through it.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion is starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
So when things get rough, when I get discouraged by the news, if I were to go to the airport and just watch people hug, I would kind of regain my confidence in love being everywhere. At least that seems to be the message. And in that, there is a lot of good sentiment. There is all kinds of relational love that we see in that kind of context. But now I want to show you the same clip, switching up a tiny bit, and see if it makes us feel a little bit different.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion is starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
So it kind of changes the way these words feel when we begin to see, when we turn on the news, when we track what's going on around the world, the different ways that people are at each other. And this idea of God making all things new, that God being present sometimes is a harder thing to see. And so I just want to show this clip one more time and just thinking of it with those two things merging together.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is.
And the reason I think that love is hard is because it's interesting to me that within any pocket, even people who are seemingly against each other, within their own context, there's quite a bit of love. Fathers love their sons and love their wives and love their children, and they love each other, and yet for some reason this idea of translating that into a way of living universally becomes more and more hard. And I think for me, as I have been reflecting on that, I think love is hard because it requires us choosing. It requires us to choose maybe something that our natural predisposition is. Sometimes it results in us choosing a commitment over a feeling. And as well, love is all about giving away, that it's about letting one's self go and putting yourself out there. And in that respect, love, I think, is quite hard. Choosing to love can be hard. I'd like us to look at a few references from the Bible, and I'll kind of quickly flip through them. You're welcome to follow along if you want to in the Bibles that are in the pews. The first text I'd like us to look at is Colossians 3, verses 12 through 14. If you want to follow along, it's on page 1790. So this is Colossians 3. Paul writes this: "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. And I think as we begin to understand this passage, it is outlining love as a metaphor about clothing and things that we would wear, the things that we choose. And in the same way that if we wanted to stay warm on a cold day, we would likely choose a warm jacket to put on. There's certain things that you would put on if you were to choose to be a person of love. And some of these things, it's not a comprehensive list, but certainly there's these things that Paul highlights: compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. These are the certain traits that you would put on, like clothing. And within this clothing imagery, love is being pictured as a garment that is to be put on top of the other items of dress. The implication is that love is not just another virtue to be added, but actually is the supreme virtue that is overall, that brings everything together, that binds everything. And so it's more than just a value. It's actually something that pulls it all together. And so if we think about the value statements that we've been talking about, and we put it in the context of these verses, I think that we could read it, and over all of these values, put on love. Over all these values, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. New Testament scholar Douglas Moo wrote, "In the New Testament, love is frequently highlighted as that virtue without which others cease to have the value they are meant to have. Compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience attain their full power only when they are unified by and empowered by love." In other words, love is the thing that holds it together, that actually brings these other virtues to life. If we look at now 1 Corinthians 13, another familiar text, it's on page 1742. And I'll start at verse 1. He writes, if I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, if I had such a faith that I could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. And Eugene Peterson in the Message concludes this, he writes this, so no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I am bankrupt without love. And so I began thinking a little bit about this passage, because at the first read, if I had faith that could actually move mountains, where I could say to a mountain, jump into the sea, that would be, I think, pretty sweet. Like I think that would be something that we would all think, wow, that's cool that you can do that. So how would it be that if you could do that, then the action of being able to do that is translated into a noisy gong or just static and noise? And I started realizing that if love is about choosing and about displacing oneself and giving away, that if my motives connect back to self-serving, that's how I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. So in practical terms, for instance, if I were to serve others with the intent to be noticed and respected as a servant, then that's how I am. That's how I become a noisy gong. If I say I'm sorry only to look good as a person who does the right thing, then that's how I become a clanging cymbal. If I give money to the poor but make racist or disrespectful comments about others, then actually I am nothing. So no matter what I say, what I believe, what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. And I like that what Paul does is he moves then to giving us a picture of what love looks like in action, defining it. And these are familiar to us. We've heard these often. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud. Love is not rude. Love does not demand its own way. Love is not irritable. Love keeps no record of being wronged. Love does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. Love is always hopeful. Love endures through every circumstance. So this is love in action. And there's one more picture of love that I'd like us to look at. And this is John who paints this picture. This is 1 John 4. If you want to look, it's on page 1858. I'm going to start at the end of verse 8. This is what John writes about love. God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. And then verse 19, we love because God first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen, they cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command, anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. And so we begin to see this picture of the intensity of God's love for us. That his love is seen in the sending of his Son, Jesus. And I think that if you've been a part of the conversation here at the Connection for a while, if you've been part of a church culture, that this becomes really easy that it begins to lose its significance at some level, because we understand that this is the whole plan, that God would send his Son and so forth. But it's almost like we think it would be an easy decision that the Father, Son, Holy Spirit sitting around the table, they're kind of spitballing, we've got this problem, and the Father says, well, how about you go? They're going to kill you, but I'm going to bring you back to life, so it's all good, so don't worry. it seems a little bit like that's how we get really fast to that Jesus dies, but then he's raised again, and so somehow that's okay. And we forget that the agony of what it would have meant for the father to actually say goodbye to his son and to send his son out, first limited because his son would have been wrapped in humanity. So there was limitations right off the bat. And then to be placed into the hands of humans, knowing that ultimately that he would be killed, would have been a heart-wrenching experience for a father. I think about what it would be like for me to give up one of my kids. And I guess we all laugh and joke. I mean, there's days, I suppose, that I feel like I would give away one of my kids. But the truth is that I would want them back after about 30 seconds, maybe even faster, because ultimately we love them with everything. And I think that there's this same picture of what God's love looks like, that he's willing to let go of his son, place his son in our hands so that we could be reconnected to him. Mother Teresa, reflecting on this passage that I just read in John, wrote that love to be real, it must cost, it must hurt, it must empty us of self. And so there's this element in which love is, in emptying of ourselves, does begin to cost us. But this way of living is the manifestation of love. And as we've talked, that love is clearly larger than any one of these virtues that we've talked about. It's bigger than patience and kindness and gentleness and all these things. It's bigger than a single trait. That actually love is to be seen as a way of living. And it's defined in how we live in community, how we treat others, how we organize our time and our resources. And on top of that, it reminds us that as humans, we talk about love, but love is rooted in a deeper place than just humanity. It's rooted in God. It's rooted in the example of Jesus Christ. And the example of love, of how to actually live love, is built on a different way of living than we often are traditionally accustomed to living. The values and principles and presuppositions that we tend to gravitate towards are often different than the way Jesus lived. The things that we avoid or despise or name weak are the things that Jesus holds up as the benchmarks to live by. Grace, mercy, humility, serving, these are the things that begin to emerge as we watch Jesus and love in action as we track with Jesus. And to go even further, that true love in living this kind of love, it displaces oneself from the center of the universe. And so in understanding that, we recognize that love is more than a feeling, that love is actually a commitment that often isn't convenient. And so authentic love is a commitment that is to stick with something when it hurts or when it's hard or when it isn't fun sometimes. And so as we begin to see this unpacked in the picture of Jesus, we begin to realize that love is powerful, overwhelming, and totally beyond logic or reason. I want to show you some pictures that a photographer, Judith Fox, took. And Judith Fox, 3 years into her marriage to her husband, Edmund, they discovered that he had Alzheimer's. And so over the course of 10 years, Judith watched her husband begin to deteriorate. A man that used to perform surgery, who could fly planes, that used to run universities, he began to forget how to turn on the coffee maker. He forgot how to place a phone call. And he would forget even what his wife had told him just moments earlier. And so she began to take pictures of her husband, originally to document her husband's journey with Alzheimer's. But as she began to look at those photos, as she reflected on the photos, she realized that she was seen into the soul of her husband. She was seeing the things that she had grown to love about her husband. And as you see these pictures, as they go by, we actually aren't really seeing anything remarkable to our eye. They're quite plain. There's him in a bed, him in a chair, a shot of his hands, his smile, him sleeping. But the culmination of these photos for her, for Judith, is a story of devotion and friendship. It's a portrait of love. And so she entitled her book, in which these photos are a part of, "I Still Do." In other words, the conclusion of this story, of these photos for her, is that the commitment I made to be with you, to be your wife, is a commitment I still do. I am committed to being with you no matter what place you find yourself in. And that's really a picture of Jesus in action. That Jesus is committed to us regardless of the place we find ourselves in. And so often as we begin to move into these places of encountering God's unwavering love, we recognize that human love in all of its goodness and its well-meant intentions is limited, is imperfect. And so we need God's love to begin to support our own love, to let it carry us, to sustain us. And as I have talked about Colossians, we recognize that the conclusions in Colossians is that love is a summation of virtues and commitment coming together. Devotion and dedication, passions and feelings, loyalty and steadfastness, binding everything together. And so for us for us as humans, this living out of love is seen or not seen in our everyday moments. Our love is expressed or not expressed in our activities, our conversations, the way we treat others, what we center our values around. And the way that we live, these small little bits and pieces begin to become the narrative of our lives. And so the reason I want us to look at these pictures that Judith took of her husband is I want us to, for a moment, to think about our own stories. Our own kind of photograph, books of photographs, so to speak. And if you were to flip through those books, if somebody else were to flip through that book, what kind of story of love does your way of living tell? If you look through the photos of my life, if you spent a year with me and or just looked at pictures of me from a year, what would you say that I loved? How would you say that I loved? Wilford Peterson, in a poem, has a line in which he says, "The little things are the big things." And what I think he means by that is that small things have the ability to accumulate into something big. The boy with his lunch would be one example, that he has a small lunch, but he gives it to Jesus, and through the working of the Spirit, it's multiplied, and it feeds 5,000 people. And so as I have begun to think about this value, our value statements, and to think about how love is fleshed out in that, I'm beginning to, in my own way, to understand that I need to approach this idea of love in small ways. And so I'm looking at the values, and I'm picking a few things out of those values and starting small as a way to kind of begin to try and accumulate some kind of and generate some kind of love in action. Often I've talked about my love for sports and I enjoy the competitiveness, I enjoy the pushing of my own physical limitations. And yet, at the same time, athletics also brings me face to face with some of the dark places, the darkness in me, that there's things that kind of that bubble up that maybe aren't so loving. And one thing that I started playing frisbee about a year and a half ago. And one thing that Lori noticed this too. She doesn't play, but she's noticed. And Annalie, our daughter, started playing. Is that the that community of people are so open and generous that it's kind of this open embracing, and so people play hard, but there's room for anyone to play. And I really appreciate that about Frisbee. I think that for me it seems like it's opened some ideas for how community life at church should look. And yet there's this funniness in kind of competitiveness where there's these things that bubble up in me where even though I appreciate this openness and this embracing, I don't like when people are better than me. And I don't like when somebody can run faster than me. I'm not sure why, but I just don't always like that. And so I'm learning about what it means to actually appreciate others' ability, to appreciate others' skill, and not to see it as a competition in terms of value, but a competition that in the end is about having fun and making each other, pushing each other to be better people, better players. I also have been thinking a little bit about what it means to translate this openness and this generosity to a way of seeing outreach, a way of embracing others. And I told this story this morning, but I just need to preface it by saying I recognize it makes no sense. It's totally illogical. But here's the thing. I don't know if you've noticed in our parking lot, but often it's like an epicenter for taxi cab drivers. I don't know if you have noticed that. I mean, the upside about that is if your car ever breaks down, you're going to get a ride home because they seem to always be here. And I don't know where this comes from, but there's something about taxi cab drivers. They just bug me. I have no foundation why they bug me. I have no idea. And so Laura and I were here last night, and we were leaving. There was quite a few cabs in the parking lot, and I was mumbling something. I don't even know what I was saying. And she said, "What is it about taxi cab drivers that you don't like?" And the truth is, I have no idea. Like, I don't even know a taxi cab driver. I have no basis on why I wouldn't like taxi cab drivers. And she was like, "You know what you should do is you should buy them coffee." And I was like, "No." But then I started thinking, but why wouldn't I? And also, if I appreciate this value of openness and generosity and kindness, if there's any of that that's in me, if that's the thing that I appreciate, if I want to be that, then why am I so like annoyed by cabs in the parking lot? It doesn't even make sense. So my small thing for this week is that I am going to buy them coffee. So far I'm 0 for 2 because I bought coffee twice and today they're just not showing up. So I've been giving coffee away, so hang out with me and you'll probably get a free coffee. But the point is that why not? They're out there all the time. I see them probably the same drivers five or six times a week. What an opportunity just to say hi and say, "Hey, I know that you are driving all day. Can I get you a cup of coffee? How's your day going?" It seems like such a simple thing, and if I'm serious about being open and generous and embracing, and I like diversity and all these things, then that's going to be a small place that I start. I think also I've been reflecting on prayer and how prayer is such a way to support friendship and a way to support family and so on and neighbors and so forth. And so one small thing I'm going to also do is to be more intentional about praying for people. Small things that I think I can do, and as I begin to live into those, that maybe I'll begin to do more and more things. And so for you, as you think about love, as you think about all these values, I would say, what are some things that you could do, a small or a big thing, that this week, what is one thing that you could do, or a half a thing? I guess you could buy coffee for the taxi cab drivers too. Wouldn't it be funny if they had like 30 cups of coffee and they're like, "You should go to Emmanuel because you'll get free coffee"? That would be kind of a, I guess, a cool thing at some levels until we stop buying coffee and then be like, where's the coffee? But the point being, a small thing. What is one small thing? Giving blood would be an example. Really simple thing that you could do that makes a difference. Sunday mornings before the service, they have a whole group of ESL students coming in and helping out once in a while. That would go a long ways in helping Cecilia and Chris. It's a small thing we could do that would make a big difference. Sean Cruikshank, he was just talking about the camp, was just saying to me that there's quite a few Syrian refugees that are becoming to Prince Albert, and they're finding ways to get involved, maybe housing them at the camp. That doesn't seem as small. It seems like a bigger thing, but certainly there's these opportunities for us to begin to look outward and to begin to find ways to live out these values of love. The way we kind of conclude every teaching and transition into our response time is by reflecting on the table. And the table is, of course, a picture of God's love for us, of being able to understand God's love in action. The bread and the juice representing the body and the blood of Christ. The nourishment for our lives. The coming forward to the table to be reminded of what our lives are to look like, of what love looks like, of taking and receiving, and in receiving, being committed to being that for others. So the way it works, if you're new here, is that we have a time of response in which the musicians will play music, the design to begin to form your own prayers. If you need a place just to be quiet or to walk, you don't have to feel trapped here. Kim, who led the community prayer, would be willing to pray with you if you need somebody to pray with. Or if you just need to be quiet and reflect, that's great. And when you're ready, you can come forward and tear off a piece of the bread and dip it in the juice. There's hand sanitizer at the front and at the back. And so as we conclude, as we move towards this time of response, I want to just encourage us that in this coming week that we would spend some time reflecting on these values that we've been talking about the last 9 weeks, and ask ourselves how our lives can tell the story of God's love, and how we can join in the work of the Spirit in enacting in small or big ways the values that point to God. Let's pray.